Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Grant and Danny welcoming you back on 106.7 The Fan on a Victory Monday presented by Priority Toyota Springfield. Home of priorities for life. Shop Priority Toyota Springfield.com. The Nats won each of their games in the NLCS in St. Louis. They come back to D.C. for Game 3 tonight. Big reason for our Victory Monday. We'll get back into them after they did the heavy lifting in our first hour in just a moment. Bob Carpenter is going to be with us in studio. But right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, we're joined by our buddy Clinton Portis. Every Monday at 11 a.m., CP stops by for his thoughts. Clinton, how should we view this? They win by 1 point, 17-16, first win of the season, second win in almost a calendar year, so you can't look a gift horse in the mouth. But it was the Dolphins, and they barely did it. How does this stack up for you?
You know, if you were looking at this at the end of the season, you would look at it the same way. A win's a win. 1 point, 10 points, it doesn't matter. You're just glad to be in the win column. Because if they would have lost that game, then we definitely would have been viewing it totally different. Saying, you lost to the Miami Dolphins. We're 0-6, and you lost to the Miami Dolphins. So take the win however you can get it. I think these guys have to learn how to win again just to get a taste of winning. You know, the locker room, the building, the entire building is totally different just because of all the pressure that was building up over the last 5 weeks. So all of a sudden, you get a win, guys seem more relaxed, more focused, ready to get back to work.
Clinton, what did you notice different with Bill Callahan in charge? Obviously, they committed to running the ball, only managed 17 points, but they sure ran it.
Well, not only did they commit to running the ball, the play action, which we constantly talk about, having a game plan that actually resembles each other. So you saw play action passes that got Case outside of the pocket that gave you an opportunity to take shots down the field. Being aggressive in play calling, you know, the big plays to Terry McLaurin, we hadn't seen. Taking shots down the field opens up a lot, especially if you can get the run game established. You know, I think in talking to AP realizes he left a lot of yards on the field, but it's more from a pressing standpoint, you know, because you hadn't, it's like a kid in a candy store. You know, all of a sudden you get an opportunity when you hadn't had opportunity for five games, you're kind of late in the game. And then your parents take you into the candy store and like, okay, you can have chocolate again, get whatever you want. So you're running everywhere instead of just saying, hey, this is what I like. But just for AP to have that, that opportunity to carry his team, finding an identity. I think that's what it is. If this team of Bill Callahan Sr. is going to be about running the ball, playing ball control, and playing aggressive defense, then you could live with that because you don't have anything to hang your hat in from Jay's team. You know, you didn't know the identity of the team, but looking at the aggressiveness in the first half, you know, I think the guys kind of tired out in the second half due to the weather, the heat that was down in Miami. But that first half, they looked aggressive. They looked really aggressive. They were in attack mode, and it was kind of like, hey, we're going to take our chances. You know, you saw the safety blitz from Landon Collins, getting that opportunity just for them was really good.
Clinton Portis on Grant and Danny. Terry McLaurin looks like the real deal. 100 yards and 2 touchdowns yesterday. What have you thought of him so far in his rookie season?
Well, I've been high on Terry the entire season. I think he's been the bright point, but I think the realization of Callahan, finding a go-to guy, finding your number one, identifying your number one receiver and getting him the opportunities. When you think of the better receivers, the Julio Jones and OBJs and Antonio Browns. You know, when they got opportunity, they delivered. So finally getting Terry opportunity. Hey, you know what? It should be your goal to go out and get Terry at least 10 to 15 attempts per game because you see what he's capable of doing. I mean, a couple of the routes that he ran, some of those catches, like, hey, he had a drop, but you come right back to him to keep the confidence going, to say, oh, we're not down on you because you just dropped the ball. We're coming back to you in even a more needed situation than he delivers. Because if you don't make that play coming out of your end zone where he had, I think it was like a 25-yard catch, if you don't make that play, you're in trouble. You know, you're in big trouble right there. But to be able to come back to him as a rookie, he's doing this. So, you know, I think Terry is a bright spot for the future, for now and the future. But getting other guys to just chime along, buying time for other guys to pick up off of Terry, to pick up off of Jonathan Allen, just buying time for those guys to come around and get to understand it, because you did just switch coaches. You know, Coach Callahan to Coach O'Connell being the play caller. Everybody is trying to get refamiliarized with each other.
Clinton, would you make a Case Keenum? Despite all the running effectiveness, he was only 13 out of 25, lost a fumble. The two touchdowns to McLaurin obviously stood out, but they didn't really move and throw the ball that well, I didn't think. And against the worst defense in the sport, my thought was, if Dwayne Haskins can't do this right now against this really bad defense with all the run success that they had, we got a different conversation we have to have. What were your thoughts there?
Well, me and Cooley had this conversation this morning, and it was a calmness that Case Keenum brings, because you saw Josh Rosen as a quarterback, and then all of a sudden Fitzpatrick come in. It was night and day. That offense was night and day once Fitzpatrick came in, because you gave the guys an opportunity to make plays. You know, for Haskins, getting an understanding of the entire situation, the entire offense, understanding where you're trying to go. You look at Case, he was constantly in third and short, and you're getting crossing routes, which you hadn't had. Everybody in the NFL been running crossing routes. We haven't. We haven't been running crossing routes, drag routes, coming across the field. So getting on the same page with some of these guys. You know, I think Case, you know, he didn't have a huge day, but I don't want to see Case throw the ball 40 times a game. I would rather live with this game plan, because he's going to be able to put you in a better situation where he's not turning the ball over. You saw a couple times where he held the ball, and it was like, hold your breath. I think one time on the rollout where he threw the ball, there was two Dolphin defenders, and he was trying to escape. The ball went into the dirt. But, you know, for another quarterback, for Haskins, that could have possibly been a pick. We don't know. But until Haskins get a grasp of this entire offense where he learns the defense, he can go and put everybody in position. You know, something that stood out yesterday, no holding penalties from the offensive line. This offensive line has been getting 10 holding calls per game, and all of a sudden, in 1 week, you go from 10 holding penalties last game to zero. And, you know, you just got to start finding the little steps, things to improve on. So for Case, I think, again, for Case, being in this situation, first two games, I felt like Case played well. Third game, as a team, we had no plan for the Chicago Bears and Khalil Mack. And then all of a sudden, Case injury, being taken off the field, Colt McCoy, now being thrown back in, you have a new coach. So it's like one of those situations, he's been adjusting every game. And I think when he goes back and watch film, he's going to say, hey, I missed the guy. I missed a couple throws. But at the same time, we come away with a W. We got a tough game against the San Francisco 49ers. Let's get back to the drawing board and let's figure out what works for Case. Because you're in third and short when normally this entire season you've been facing third and long. So that was an improvement.
Clinton, 23 for 118 on the ground, speaking of improvements, was a big day for Adrian Peterson, but I'm between two minds because the Dolphins have been giving up 170 rushing this season, and you know, by those standards, the Redskins still kind of struggled to get the ground game going against Miami. How should we feel about that element of this team, which is seemingly Bill Callahan's priority, going up against a much better 49ers team this week?
So I think when you look at AP, after AP watches this film today, he's going to say, man, I left 200 yards on the field, because he had an opportunity for some big hitters, and it was just kind of one of those pressing. He's so used to having to dodge a guy in the backfield that Coach Callahan actually schemed up a good running game to get you on the edges, and you were cutting back. You know, he had a counterplay opportunity that there was no one out there. If he stays to the outside and he tried to cut it back, you know, a couple misreads that could have been big plays, you know, 40, 50-yard runs. And if you add that to the fold, you're talking about another 100 yards to add on top of what he done. So for AP, I think it's just about getting comfortable, like the reset, and understanding, hey, you know what? We still have a long season to go. But in a running back's mind, you're five games behind. You know, you didn't play in the first game. Then you get 4 weeks that you had no impact on the game. You didn't have 100 yards combined over 4 weeks. So you get into week six, and it's like, okay, I know I'm going to get the ball. Here go my opportunity. I need to make every play a big play, when in reality, he just has to stay to the course. Like, trust your eyes, trust your instincts, know what you're supposed to be doing as a running back, and it's going to come. So when he goes back and look, he can say, you know what, I went from last place in the NFL in rushing to I could have had a 250 or 300-yard day, and I would have been back in contention and on track to do what my goals were before the season, and that's to go for over 1,000 yards.
Thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it, dude. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, no problem, man. Catch y'all later.
Clinton Portis, always good on Grant and Danny. The Redskins have a win. They're 1-5. Bob Carpenter is going to join us in studio as we spin back over toward the Nationals to get ready for Game 3 of the NLCS next right here on The Fan. A victory Monday, Grant and Danny, presented by Priority. Toyota Springfield, home of Priorities for Life. Shop Priority. ToyotaSpringfield.com. The Redskins beat the Dolphins by a point.
That's, yay.
I guess you could say the backseat. I would actually throw that into the trunk at this point.
Yeah, it's the car is full of legitimate sport, and we needed one more. You got to ride in the trunk with the keg and the chili.
The Nats are up 2-0 in this league championship series over St. Louis, and this is despite the fact that they scored just 2 runs in Game 1 and 3 runs in Game 2 because they got unbelievable starting pitching, and their bullpen has been flawless. Bob Carpenter is the face and voice of Nationals television on baseball all season long. And in these postseason series now, like the rest of us, he's watching. Now, you were traveling, obviously, and you do a lot of pre- and post-coverage and TV for Masson. But it's great to have you in studio. We appreciate the time.
Hey, Grant, Danny, thanks for having me here. It's good to be here for the first time. You guys have a heck of a facility right here.
It's not too bad, right down the street from Nats Park. So we moved on over here so that one of the news stations would be closer to all the goings-on. But the side effect was that we get to just waddle down to the ballpark after the show every couple of days, which
it's
pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Can you believe – listen, this team is built on starting pitching. We know that. It's no secret. There's no secret sauce here. There's right. No, like, hidden agenda. Mike Rizzo is very adamant about this. If you've got great starting pitching, you got a chance every year. Sometimes it, quote, doesn't work out, you win 86 games. Sometimes it does, you win 95. But this is another level, what Sanchez and Scherzer did back-to-back.
Yeah, it's amazing, and, you know, they're two different kinds of pitchers. I mean, Anibal throws a fastball 88 or so. He's got all these different arm angles, all these different pitches. I think FP found a story the other night that he retweeted or tweeted about it, that there were 20 different velocities at which Anibal threw the ball in Game 1. So think about that.
Wow.
When you're talking about high 60s up to high 80s, maybe touching 90 here and there. And then, of course, Max, you know, the concern about Game 2 was, is he going to be too jacked up? You know, he's pitching in his hometown and all that. Max just brushed all of that off his shoulder and went out and just pitched a brilliant game on Saturday. So now you have arguably the guy who's been the best of the four. I don't think they're the big three anymore. I think Sanchez is
four.
He's bolted down that door and locked himself inside with the other three guys. So it's the big four now. But, you know, you got Steven tonight, 18 wins, led the league, and Jack Flaherty throwing the heck out of the ball. Maybe
he's filthy.
Maybe the best young starter in the National League. I don't know about some of the younger guys that we don't get to see in the American League. So this is a great matchup. But this starting thing has been amazing. And there were those who said, yeah, the Nats could mix and match with some starters out of the bullpen here and there in the 5-game series. What are they going to do when you get to the 7-game series? Because you can't have guys coming out of the bullpen that much. Corbin came out for one batter, which I thought was a great move by Davey, who's pulling all the right levers right now. You know, kudos to Davey Martinez for the way he's navigating his ball club through all of this. But so far, so good on the seven-game series. Long way to go. And, you know, Strasburg's game tonight against Flaherty, this is really going to be something, because if the Nats win it, they're really in the driver's seat. And if St. Louis wins it, they're right back in the series, because then the Nats would have to win two in a row to keep that thing from going back to their ballpark.
Yeah, tough to do, as we just saw, coming out of St. Louis up 2-0. Bob Carpenter and Grant and Danny. What I loved about the trip out to the Midwest was the unlikely hero stepping up. We see this during October, but Yan Gomes was only playing in game one because Kurt Suzuki was not healthy. He hits the double that scores the initial run of the game, and they lead 1-0 most of the night.
After they pitched to him two outs, a runner at second, and first base open, I'm sure Mike Schilt regrets that.
No doubt. And it might have been the only mistake he made in two games, and it cost him pretty large. Game two, Michael Taylor is only playing because Victor Robles is not available to come back, and he hits the solo home run in center field. You go back to game one, and Sean Doolittle gets a four-out save, and he was perfect out of the pen, only executing that role because Daniel Hudson's having his baby in Phoenix. Yeah. The number of guys that were asked to do something a little bit different than would have been the case, substantial, and they all did it. Isn't this kind of what it takes in the playoffs? It seems like the stars aligned for this group, both against the Dodgers and early on in this NLCS.
Yeah, and you know, Juan Soto, who hadn't made that much noise with the bat last week or two of the season, gets the big hit against Milwaukee. He and Rendon tie the game in L.A., you know, and so sometimes it's your three and four guys, and sometimes it's the guy batting eighth or the guy batting second, like Adam Eaton, who goes 0-for for a couple of games, and then his last time up there, you know, does serious damage, or maybe one of his middle at-bats of the game. So it's a great point.
Too. Like, to me, early in the game, he looked kind
of
lost.
Waving
he wasn't
the pitches
the ball
out of the zone.
The
I'm going, who is this?
But then he's had two great late-inning at-bats.
Well, I loved his quote about going total opposite common sense against Adam Wainwright. Yeah, because 3-2, yeah, I'm getting a fastball. But wait a minute, he's been pitching me backward all night long. So if Wainwright throws a fastball there, Adam probably, if it's a strike, Adam can't pull the trigger and probably strikes out looking. Instead, he's out ahead of the curveball and hits it past Paul Goldschmidt into the right field corner. Game over, in essence, at that point. So, yeah, October is a funny thing because, you know, I grew up in St. Louis, and in 1985, this guy named Buddy Biancalana of the Kansas City Royals jumped up and got some big hits. I mean, think about Cody Ross with the Giants. They pick him up late in the season. And
Toy Cannon.
You know, and as FP says, he'll never buy a meal in San Francisco again the rest of his life. So you never know who that guy is going to be, and I think it's one of the great charms of October baseball because I'm not so sure that happens in other sports. Usually in the NFL, basketball, and hockey, the guys that are making the big money, they're the ones who jump up and do heroic things during the Stanley Cup playoffs. But baseball, it's got so many different little nuances to it. Your point well taken on that, because you never know who that guy is going to be.
Well, you think of the Redskins, it made it that much more special because it's heroes like Timmy Smith, a practice squad player, you know, a guy that was an afterthought in Doug Williams, who wasn't supposed to be anything. And then here he was leading the Redskins. But you're right. In baseball, you get those historic things. I mean, I think of guys that are just added to postseason rosters, you know, who barely had impacts. I mean, I'm thinking of the Yankees catcher, who all of a sudden was an automatic home run, it seemed like, when he'd come up in huge moments. But I want to speak about Juan Soto a little bit. We can see what the plan is here for the Cardinals, right? It's a lot of breaking stuff, a lot of off-speed. What we saw early in the season, taking advantage of Soto's maybe aggressiveness and desire to do some big things, and then they're kind of getting him with hard stuff late. What are you expecting the rest of the way from Soto?
Well, maybe Juan needs to step in and do his two-strike approach from the first pitch of every at-bat. Because, you know, as a rookie last year, we saw him spread out, you know, you get on his feet, get on his legs, and still be able to drive the ball for doubles and home runs the other way. So he doesn't give up a whole lot in the power department when he does that. So Juan looks like he's really swinging hard right now, and he's just trying to air it out and get that one big homer. And, you know, Adam Wainwright, man, he's a crafty right-hander. He's the crafty version of the left-hander from the right side with that. You know, I think his Twitter handle's like Uncle Charlie, which – it's his curveball. That's his curveball.
That's his bread and butter, man.
Yeah, and that's what he's made his living on, and he takes advantage of aggressive young hitters doing that. So hey, I'm not, you know, Kevin Long. I'm not Joe Dillon. I'm not going to be out here telling Juan Soto how to hit. But I'm seeing some big swings and misses that we just don't see as a rule from Juan Soto.
Yeah, it looks to me like every swing he's trying to hit a grand slam, even if the bases aren't loaded.
Yeah.
And he's come up with some huge swings, so you know he'll make the adjustment. But now's a good time to start thinking about doing it. Bob Carpenter's in studio with us. Grant and Danny here on The Fan, hanging out with the face and voice of the Nationals on Masson all season long. We'll take your thoughts, your calls, and questions on the Nats at 800-636-1067. What's your confidence in this bunch right now, coming back from St. Louis in the catbird seat, up 2-0? You're listening to G&D.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
The Nats play the Cardinals at home, Game 3, NLCS tonight. History being made in D.C., the first league championship series game at Nationals Park. And it should be hopping with them up 2-0 in this best of 7 series. Bob Carpenter is in studio with us on Grant and Danny. Danny, I don't know if you saw my tweet, but I walked into Charlie and Dave's booth. So I actually was posted up like a door down from them.
I think I know where this is going.
So I'm in the press area, and where we're kind of posted up is right next door. So I would keep opening the blinds after something big happened and look over at Charlie, and we'd point at each other. So a couple of times I would go over. Maybe I needed a throat lozenge from Jags.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Or perhaps I just wanted to tap someone on the shoulder and yell at something. So right before the game starts, before game one, I walk in and I see Bob Carpenter. And he is getting ready to keep the score of the ball game on the little sheet of paper that is handed out in the press box that people like me, 3 minutes before first pitch, who didn't know they were going to the game until 4 o'clock, grab because they didn't bring their scorebook to the ballpark. So they just give you a little sheet, and it's got the batting averages and the players, and you keep your score. Well, the reason this is a story for people that don't know is, Bob, I don't know if this would be, like, you're more nationally renowned as a play-by-play voice, but you have designed a scorebook that is used by, you would have more stats than I do, but I would say the majority of people who call games professionally in our industry use the Bob Carpenter scorebook. I mean, this is, yeah. I'm a longtime purveyor, but like people who have ever called a game, when you ask someone, you go, hey, what do you use for keeping score? They say, oh, get the Bob Carpenter book.
The Carpenter scorebook.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
here
you
I am, and here I am not using it.
And I walk
and you
in.
And you busted me.
Oh, my God. I'm thinking, oh, Bob Carpenter keeping score. This is like seeing Santa load up his cart.
Loose leaf paper that he found on the ground.
And,
that's what he's using?
I mean, he might as well have been using a napkin. It broke my heart. I couldn't believe it.
Well, okay, here we go. You know, these postseason games, FP and I are doing our pregame stuff on the field. We're doing interviews and all that. We never get assigned a place to sit. The press boxes are full. The broadcast booths are full. And I think back in 2012, I kept score for a game or two, but I'm moving around looking for a place to sit. I have nowhere to go. And I'm not going to really sit in the stands and keep score with my book and, you know, because I got to write in all the players and all that stuff. So anyway, long story short, I'm not doing it for postseason, but so many fans, and several of them on the heels of your tweet the other night, are busting my chops about not keeping score and posting my scorebook after the games like I do during the regular season. Because that's really the only reason I'm on Twitter. FP, it took him 5 years to talk me into going on Twitter. So then I finally relented, and I said, you know, and he said, why don't you post your scorebooks? So the fans seem to like that. So if we get to the Fall Classic next week, I'll have scorebook under my arm, like this. I'll be the little guy walking to school.
There you go.
With his little workbook, and I'll do the pregame preparation, the players and the averages and all that. And if we get to the series, I will post those. Okay.
How would you guys have covered, do you think, Daniel Hudson not being there for Game One? This became this national story, and I loved Hudson's comment where he said, "I had no idea I'd be in the center of some debate on being a father or parenting." But he's unavailable for Game One on paternity leave. He's with his wife in Phoenix. And he drew the ire of some fans, but certainly national media members. How would you have covered that as a play-by-play guy, do you think?
Well, it would have definitely been a talking point if FP and I were doing the game. It would have been talked about. And, you know, I would have been totally on the side of Daniel Hudson, because right from day one, Davey Martinez, and it's easier to say this during the regular season. It's not easy to say this during the LCS game one when you've never been there before and you want your closer available. Thank God Aníbal Sánchez took care of all that, and it became kind of an academic thing for game one. But, Davey says it's family over everything else. He has proven that he believes in that. Daniel Hudson comes out and pitches beautifully to get the last two batters in game two. And I got to tell you something, man. The thing that David Sampson, the former Miami executive, the Marlins executive, said on Twitter, just totally busting Daniel Hudson for, you know, quote, deserting his teammates or whatever way he put that. That made me sick to read that because, you know, I'm family all the way. I have two adopted daughters. My wife and I were never able to experience that, you know, that whole childbirth thing. If we had been, that would have been one or two most important days of my life and our lives. And so, you know, for somebody who has nothing to do with the Washington Nationals or, you know, are playing the games, for some guy who's an ex-executive of another ball club to bust our guy's chops, that really rubbed me the wrong way. And I'm glad there was a lot of backlash to him on Twitter about that. But I thought the Nats handled it beautifully. Daniel has obviously handled it wonderfully. I asked him tongue-in-cheek after game two, as we had the media scrum around his locker. I said, you're not planning another trip back to Phoenix before you go back to D.C., are you? And he kind of chuckled and said, well, I'd love to, but I don't think I can do that. And he came back with the team yesterday. So, hey, God bless Daniel Hudson and his family for everything they've dealt with and how well they've dealt with it here over these last several days.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Not an easy situation. They've navigated it certainly with grace, as have the Nationals. But to the Nationals specifically, Bob, to me the story would have been had Sanchez and Scherzer not been incredible. And obviously then the bullpen by extension too with Doolittle, and then you mentioned Hudson. The story would be what the Nationals aren't doing at the plate, right? Five runs in two games.
You're right.
If you tell me that, I go, maybe they got one. You know, if Scherzer threw a gem, maybe they win a 3-2 game or something like that. But we haven't noticed simply because they've been so dominant. How sustainable is that, though, to not be able to scratch a few more runs across? Because not as if they're tearing the cover off the ball right now.
Well, if you're the 1963 or the 1966 Dodgers, you can probably do
that. Then
you
can do it, yeah.
With Sandy Koufax, Don Drysdale, Johnny Podras, and the rest of that staff. I don't know, man. Maybe our guys are almost as good as them at the moment. I don't know if we'll have a whole bunch of Hall of Famers. I know one for sure is the guy who pitched game two down the road. But, yeah, you're right, Danny. The Nats need some more offense. And against Adam Wainwright, and I saw Trey Turner make a couple of adjustments. Trey, I think after his first time up trying to pull the ball, and he got retired.
That's a good point. I agree with you.
Second time up, he took the ball the other way, hit it with authority. Unfortunately, he lined out to Paul Goldschmidt.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as a hitter, and, you know, I've never stepped between the lines of a major league game, so easy for us, armchair quarterbacks or managers or hitting coaches to say, you know, you like to see guys at least trying to go the other way. Adam Eaton guessed correctly on the curveball and was able to pull the ball. So I did see some guys making adjustments against Adam Wainwright in game two, because you're playing right into his hands if you try to pull that off-speed stuff. Now, tonight, it's a different story because Flaherty brings it, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he brings it. And then I don't think fastball pitchers who throw really hard bother the Nats that much. You'll probably see Flaherty get his share of strikeouts, but maybe the Nats fare better. You know, and the Cardinals are supposedly a good hard ball hitting team as well, and Max neutralized them with his great slider on Saturday. So tonight's going to be really, really interesting because you got two guys who can bring it, although Steven Strasburg probably much better with his secondary pitches than the young kid is for St. Louis.
A curveball and changeup, yeah.
Flaherty gave up one run in six innings in his final division series start in game five, and he would have gone deeper. They didn't need him to. But if you look at his last 15 starts after the All-Star break, he had a .91 earned run average and struck out 124 batters in 99 and a third innings, and he pitched to a .142 batting average against. This is the best pitcher in baseball since the All-Star break, and over the last 2 years, one of the top six or seven pitchers in the sport. We'll get to your comments, your questions. If you got a thought for Bob, 800-636-1067. He's hanging out with us until noon here on Grant and Danny on the Fan. Game 3 of the NLCS at Nats Park tonight. Grant and Danny welcoming you back on a victory Monday presented by Priority Toyota Springfield, home of Priorities for Life. Shop Priority, ToyotaSpringfield.com. Bob Carpenter in studio on Grant and Danny. What are we thinking tonight, guys, for this environment at Nationals Park? I thought the wild card game was the best atmosphere for a Nats game I've ever experienced in my life. The division series, maybe down just a little bit, but particularly I thought the first of the games, game 3 where they lost big in the division series, I thought was really, really good. Game 4 didn't sell out. It was a little disappointing. But I think tonight's going to be electrifying, and it's going to be otherworldly. They're up 2-0. First NLCS game ever. Nats fans have been waiting for this since this team came back to D.C. It could be something for the history books.
Yeah, and I think our fans are ready for this one. I'm expecting an absolutely electric atmosphere at the ballpark tonight, and I think, you know, and they know this already. This is a position that all of us have never been in before with Nationals baseball. And FP makes this point constantly that the crowd, if you don't sit on your hands waiting for something to happen and then get crazy, if you get crazy before things happen or in anticipation of things happening, that can have an influence on what happens out there because, hey, they're not robots out there. This isn't a video
game. They hear it, yeah.
Yeah, these are human beings, and they can ride the emotions of the crowd. I think our fans, and it's a beautiful day, it's supposed to be a really nice night, I think our fans are going to be absolutely jacked up for this thing, and I think it's going to be a fantastic atmosphere. Let's, hey, any early offense by the home team goes a long way toward that game 3 dagger, you know, that you can put in the back of the opposition. You know, I got to play 3 hours. You know, you have to play 9 innings. But if the Nats can generate anything early tonight and really get that already juiced crowd to another level, it's going to be really something.
100%. I mentioned to Danny, I didn't think the crowd in St. Louis, it was great. You know, the ovations for Max and Anibal coming off as visiting pitchers and, you know, the way that they treated Matt Adams. I loved everything about the crowd itself. Nobody left. But it wasn't as loud or as crazy as I thought. It's because there being no hit. You need something to get them going
In
this game, or else you just have 45,000 people wanting to explode who can't.
Plus, we were coming from Dodger Stadium.
That's
and you
true.
Were there.
Yeah.
The decibel level is unbelievably harsh there. I mean, I don't know how Vin Scully did the last several years of his career in that ballpark.
That speaker right near the press box.
Absolutely excruciating. So maybe there's no way St. Louis could match the energy level or the decibel level we were feeling in L.A. You know, there was a weird story in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch on Friday by Dan Caesar, who's the radio TV writer there. Their ratings were down for the season. They still drew a lot of people, but FP and I noticed in September when we were there, there were a lot of empty seats, and by the seventh or eighth inning, there were a lot of folks gone, even though the Cardinals took 2 out of 3 from the Nats in that series. So I don't know if anything's going on over there, but their TV ratings were down for the regular season and for the postseason.
Wow.
Because that's a city that will usually get like a 20 rating or something. Now, they did have to play some afternoon games against Atlanta, because St. Louis and Atlanta aren't the cities the network is going to put into prime time. You know, they want L.A., they want New York, they probably like Houston, big market, and maybe D.C. But, you know, I hope this isn't a trend going on around baseball. You know, some of these games, guys, these games that take 3.5 hours and sometimes upwards of 4 hours, it's hard for fans to keep up their intensity over that amount of time, and I perfectly understand if that's the case. But I think tonight's going to be something else. I have a feeling that pregame tonight leading right up to first pitch is going to be an atmosphere we've never felt down the street before.
Have we heard, Danny, who's throwing out first pitch or yelling?
I have not. I've been looking for it. I hunt for that kind of stuff. I want to see.
I'm curious. If they haven't announced it, I almost wonder if it's a little bit of a surprise. I don't want to build something up that's not happening, but I would be really curious to see. The Caps play tonight, so it certainly wouldn't be the Capitals. With Ovechkin or somebody like that who's done it. But I would be really interested to see who throws out the first pitch and how they get the whole night started.
Like
from
a Jason Worth or maybe the Mystics fresh off a title. I don't know who you do from there. I mean, but
Elena Deladon,
I was trying to read Bob's face because that's an insider right there. I bet you know something and you're not going to say to us.
I have no idea. Hey, I hope it is.
Why'd you wink just now, Bob? I'm kidding.
You mentioned Jason Worth.
Uh-huh.
other than winning the wild card game, or other than, you know, I don't know, the seventh inning or the ninth inning when we scored seven runs against the Mets, what's the best moment in the history of the Nationals with a swing of the bat?
Game 4, 2012.
Yeah, Jason Wirth's walk-off homer against the Cardinals.
I think people would go crazy.
I think it'd be awesome.
Let's go to the phones. George is in Martinsburg. Grant, Danny, Bob Carpenter, how are you, buddy?
Hey, boys, how are you today?
Good, man.
Good.
I'm great. It's refreshing to hear Nationals talk this time of the year, and we really don't care about the Redskins, especially the Dolphins laying down for them yesterday.
I'm not sure they laid down, but we'll take them how we get them. What do you got?
I understand. Hey, I am impressed by this pitching. What can't you say about it? And Davey Martinez, he's looking like Bruce Bochy right now.
I'll tell you what, Davey Martinez is doing his best Joe Maddon. Wherever the box is, you put the box down, he's outside of it right now.
Yeah.
He is managing these games with creativity. This is something the Nationals have lacked in postseasons past. They kind of manage these games like it's June 14th and they got to go win a baseball game. That's not what this is. And he is at this moment, Bob, kind of throwing the book out, and he's going with whoever the best matchup is in that moment, and he's worrying about game three when game three comes. I love what Davey Martinez has done. Not bad for a guy who was fired on May 24th.
Yeah, and I also like, especially with the move that he made with Corbin the other night, Colton Wong is a pesky guy. If he gets on base, he's probably going to steal second. And then you've got Goldschmidt, then you've got Ozuna, then you have Yadier Molina. So for Corbin to come out of the bullpen and get that out with Davey making the call is big. But here's the other facet of that. He was warming up within the context of his bullpen day in between starts. So he's out there getting his work done anyway, and he just happens to be called into the game to get a key out. The combination of those two things, I think, indicates the thought that Davey Martinez, Paul Menhart, and maybe Mike Rizzo as well are putting into these situations before they come up so that anything that's happening, they're ready for. And I think that's one of the great things about a manager who's pulling the right levers and hitting the right buttons is that he's not caught off guard or not anticipating any situation that might come up.
Let's go to Jim in Silver Spring on G&D with Bob Carpenter. What's up, Jim?
Hey, Jim.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great day in Nats Nation. I got a couple housekeeping points, and then I want to make my general point about up to this point, this has been the perfect season for the Nationals. One, Bob Carpenter, love you, guy. Thank you so much for shouting out to Susan Mooring and me on August 28th when the Nats were playing the Orioles, and they played our Nationals victory song on the Jumbotron. It was a tremendous thrill for us. And
yeah, that was fun.
To hear you guys banter about, particularly FB, talking about how we didn't have to listen to Go Cubs Go all weekend in Chicago. That was a great, great moment. Brings up the point that for the season, we are exercising a lot of ghosts because we've vanquished the Phillies, we vanquished the Giants, we took down the Dodgers, and now here we are taking down the Cardinals, I believe. But other housekeeping points for Grant. Grant, I just, you know, please keep up with your daily stats from Bob. Michael A. Taylor's lifetime batting average is not 220, it's 240. Please.
I didn't say his batting average career is 240. He's had 3 years where he's been an everyday player. He's hitting the 220s twice.
He's trending back up, but I'm saying you quoted his career average at 220. It's 240.
Okay, 240 is terrible. Thank you for the phone call. He strikes out a lot, and he doesn't get on base. Now, I'm not going to argue with you about Michael Taylor. He's played very well, but you're acting like he's hitting 300. The question was, why are people not giving Michael A. Taylor the nod as a starter? Because Victor Robles is better. He's had 3 years where he got chances to start, and in those years, he hit 228 and 227. The other year, I think he hit 265 or something. So congratulations to him for hitting 270. That's incredible. He's a great defensive player, and he runs very fast. He's not a good hitter. He hit a home run, which was key, and I was happy about that. Hopefully, he can deliver another big swing, but it looks like maybe Victor Robles would be back.
Yeah, what do you think about that tonight?
Well, I hope so because, you know, the Nats need Victor. He's a good defensive player. And he's a future Gold Glover. I mean, I think some people are talking about him winning the Gold Glove this year. I don't know if that's going to happen because I don't know if enough people around baseball yet are aware of how good he is defensively. You know, as a local broadcaster, I try to be careful into saying our guy's the MVP or our guy's the gold glove winner or our guy's this and that because, you know, as a local guy who watches every game, you have to be careful of overblowing what everybody around baseball might know about the guy that we already know. So Victor, in my opinion, will win gold gloves. If he wins one this year, I'll be the first one to jump up and say, hey, that's awesome. But that's in his future. This is the kind of kid we're talking about. He can get a bunt base hit. He probably makes contact better than Michael A. does. But I tell you, Michael A. Taylor is a great guy to have on your ball club.
100%.
Because if something goes wrong with somebody in the outfield, whether it's Robles or even Adam Eaton or if Juan Soto, you know, God forbid something happens, Michael can play any of those positions at a very high level.
And this and time of year, he might be as good a bench bat or bench player as there is. He's got power. He can run like the wind. And game two notwithstanding, that was a fluke. He's unbelievable defensively.
So I want him as a late-inning defensive replacement. I want him as a pinch runner.
This is
not to say he doesn't belong anywhere. He absolutely does.
He's also come up with big swings.
I'm enjoying the big swings. I'm so thrilled that it happened. Yeah. Because without him, who knows where we are? Who knows if they beat the Dodgers without Taylor stepping in and having a couple great at-bats?
What time are you getting to the ballpark today?
Oh, I'll get there about 3:30, 4 o'clock maybe.
And people can watch you on Masson tonight?
Oh, yeah. We're part of the one-hour Dan and Bo pregame show, which will air right up until, I guess, 7:30. Then the guys do an hour afterwards. So Epi and I are in the field doing our thoughts together and also some interviews. And so, you know, it's fun to be around the ballpark. I terribly miss doing the games. It's hard to sit there after covering your team all year long and not be able to do the play-by-play of the postseason games. I know some play-by-play guys make a big deal out of it. Hey, I'm one of those guys. I kind of keep feelings to myself on these things. I'm glad to be at the ballpark. I'm glad Masson wants FP and I to be part of it.
I agree
with
that, yeah.
If they wanted to save a few bucks and some per diem and some travel expenses, they'd say, hey, thanks for a great season. You know, Dan and Bo will take care of things in the studio. We'll get a few things from the ballpark. But Masson is committed to covering the Nats, and so for FP and I, it's very gratifying that they want us at the ballpark, they want us on camera, they want the fans to see us. So it's not the same for us, but we're awfully glad to be part of the whole thing.
Well, hopefully next time we talk to you, the Nats have strung a couple more wins together. Bob, really appreciate you coming in studio.
Thanks for the invite, guys.
Thank you, buddy.
Absolutely.
Great to see the inner workings of 106.7.
Very glamorous.
That's right.
Here.
It's very nice. You can see our studio. We've done a lot with it here.
I'm overwhelmed. You guys have done great things with the
all
place.
The decorations.
Bob
blank
Carpenter
walls.
On Grant and Danny. Steve Phillips, former GM of the Mets at 1 o'clock today. We'll get into the Redskins a little more detail next hour, as well as the Nationals trying to get their offense going. Who's got to step up if they're going to score more runs? You're listening to The Fan.
It's the season to change at Ted Britt Ford, your F-150 HQ. Right now, get up to $11,000. Below MSRP on a new 2019 Ford F-150 truck. Plus, no payments for 60 days. In honor, Ted Britt Ford being in business for 60 years. Take advantage of up to $13,000 below MSRP on a 2019 Escape. And again, no payments for 60 days. Up to $8,000 off new 2019 Ford Rangers. Up to $8,000 off 2019 Ford Mustangs. $7,000 off of the Ford Explorer. Again, no payments for 60 days on all those things. My guys over at Ted Britt Ford are celebrating 60 years in the biz. And that's right. They've been doing it for 60 years. And the Summer of 60 event may be winding down, but you can still take advantage of their generosity where you don't pay them anything for 2 months. And when you buy from Ted Britt Ford, you get Ted Britt for life. That's lifetime vehicle coverage. New pre-owned, doesn't matter. Anything less than 100,000 miles, you get it. Do what I've done, not one, not two, three different times. That's right, three-time Ted Britt customer. Go see him, Fairfax Chantilly. Click away at TedBritt.com, and when you go, tell him Danny sent you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.